We'll focus on the November 21st, 2009 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Welcome to yet another edition of the Rain Report, available via terrestrial landline at 773-358-7845, thanks to Udle Systems, UDDLE.com. That's 773-358-7845. I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN. For years, Gary Pierce, KN4AQ, has been producing videos. Only quite recently has Gary been producing ham radio documentaries based on forums and ham radio conferences, including the Dayton Hamvention. In part one of this Rain Report, we learned about Gary's company called ARVN, Amateur Radio Video News, which is not a news service contrary to its name. This week, we're going to delve into the nuts and bolts behind successful video production work. Resuming his interview with Gary Pierce, here's Rain's founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP.
Let's get more into the nuts and bolts of this. When you actually videotape a presentation, whether there are slides or a power presentation, you take an output from the computer so you can actually have the speaker superimposed over that, or how does that work?
Usually what I do is just shoot the screen with the second camera, because most slide presentations are accompanied by somebody who's waving a laser pointer at the screen. So you can't capture that off of the computer itself to be able to see the screen that they're manipulating. So I'll have one camera pointed at the screen, one camera pointed at the speaker. Unfortunately, a lot of people make what we call eye charts out of their PowerPoint slides and have very tiny type and very small pictures on them. So sometimes they'll take the camera off of the person that's talking, pan over to the screen and zoom in and show a close-up. If you're watching the video, you can actually see a little bit more than somebody sitting in the audience can see, because I'm taking you a couple of inches away from the PowerPoint screen.
And your cameras are all mounted on tripods?
Yeah.
You're not having a whole lot of the darn thing to move it from the speaker to the screen or what have you.
Yeah, it depends on how far apart they are. Here at Tapper, there's a pretty good distance, so I've got to pan pretty quick. Some other conferences I do, the screen's right next to the speaker, so I don't have to do much, just pan over and see it.
So you have two cameras. What do you feed them into?
They're each camcorders. They're just recording on the DV format.
What about the audio source?
I have a set of wireless mics, so I'll put a wireless mic up on the podium, and I'll usually just connect it with a clip or rubber band to the microphone that the speaker's talking into. And I've got a second wireless handheld mic that will pass around the audience when people want to ask questions. And I bring enough extra equipment that I can plug a wireless receiver into the public address system for the room. So I'm kind of doing a little value add for the room, because instead of people having to shout out questions from the audience, now they can just talk into a mic. Everyone can hear what the questions are.
I have this problem at the Dayton Hamvention recording forums. When a guy wanders away from the microphone, in your case, he wanders away from the lectern. What do you do then?
That's happened now and then. I've usually got another camera aimed at the audience that will pick up cutaway shots, and when people are asking questions, I'll have shots of the audience. And that camera just has the microphone that's built into the camera. So it's picking up all the sound in the room. And if somebody wanders away, I'll bring up that microphone, or just make the microphone on the podium louder. It makes the background noise come up. I try to talk to him and say, no, stay by the microphone. But if they really want to wander around and not stay by the public address mic, I'll give them the handheld wireless and wander to their heart's content.
And some of them just don't feel like they need to use the mic, so they'll stand out in front of the lectern. For me, that presentation is totally a waste. It does help that A, you talk to them ahead of time, and B, you are physically present to make whatever adjustments or corrections you need to make.
Here at Tapper, when we shot it last year, the first time that I shot the Tapper convention, I was working with Steve Bible, who was coordinating it, and talking to him about this idea of planting microphones in the audience and getting them to people. He understood the idea, but they'd never done that before. So it sort of worked. Sometimes they got a microphone to somebody, sometimes they didn't. Well, he saw the set of DVDs that was produced, and he realized the advantage of having the mic in somebody's hand rather than just picking up audio from way across the room. This year, he was my chief enforcer. He made sure nobody talked until they had the microphone in front of them.
So you're actually recording on a couple of camcorders. You take that home, and then what do you feed that audio and video into?
It gets recorded on huge hard drives.
How do you sync the two cameras?
By listening to the sound, I'll find approximately the same point from each camera and pick one word and make a mark on that and line up those marks on the video editing program, and then play the two or three lines of audio running together. If they're exactly synchronized, no echo, I may hear a little phase distortion. And if they're more than a 30th of a second off, I'll start to hear a bit of echo. And I'll just slide them along the timeline of the editing system until they sound perfect. And then I'll turn off the other tracks and just have the one good track that I want to play.
Is there not a good way or an easy way to sync the two together with a time track?
The more professional equipment, the more expensive equipment, will allow you to record what they call a time code track. And they'll allow you to feed each camera with the same time code system and synchronizing pulses that keep the cameras running at exactly the same speed. The cameras that I use don't have those facilities. I'd have to spend another $20,000 or $30,000 each to be able to get a camera like that. I've done plenty of professional programs like that, but they're out of my price range for doing something like this.
You're listening to some of the nuts and bolts behind ARVN, amateur radio video news with its driving force, Gary Pierce, KN4AQ. This is the Rain Report, being excerpted this week from the audio gathered at the Tapper ARRL Digital Conference held this past September in suburban Chicago. We'll be right back. This is Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.
Up until this program, I would have my assistant just stop and start the second camera whenever someone was asking a question or whether there's something interesting to catch in the audience, or applause or a laugh line or something. I'd like to get that. Mm-hmm. And I learned I had to resynchronize every time camera stopped and started. So for this conference, I just bought a whole lot of extra tapes and told my assistants, just push record and go.
You say tape, you're actually using a DV format?
Yeah, DV is still a videotape format. And it's still the highest quality recording. The hard drive recordings, the solid state recording devices all compress more than DV tape does. So the image quality isn't as good as what you can get from DV tape.
What kind of differences are there in the resolutions between the highest quality hard drive versus your tape?
The resolution is going to be the same. We're all recording 525 line NTSC. I record standard definition. I don't do high def yet. But the picture will be noisier and softer. The perception of the picture as you watch it on the screen will be a little fuzzier.
So the audio is comparable in a way, I'm
sure. The audio will be just as good. In terms of recording medium and bandwidth and the data rate it takes, audio is tiny. Video is huge. They all do good audio.
Do you use any kind of limiters, compressors, that sort of thing for your audio?
I don't do them during the shoot because I want to capture the full dynamic range, but I'll compress the audio as it goes onto the DVD. You don't want the softest sounds to be really hard to hear and then something to come blasting in. And we do that in broadcasting all the time. All the professional stuff that I do is compressed. Some of it, and because I do mostly commercials, is very compressed because we want you to hear our sound. And if my client sees his commercial on the air, and the next commercial after it or the commercial that came before it sounds louder, I'll get a phone call. And they'll say, why aren't we as loud?
I find that really annoying.
I'm sorry, everyone out there, but I am the guy responsible for commercials being louder than the program. It's all my fault. I apologize. I worked at NBC, at Channel 5 here in Chicago for a couple of years back in the late 70s. In the audio control room, there was a sign. I think this sign was left over from many years before I worked there. These were old studios. They'd been around since the 50s that said to the audio operator, the audio engineer, volume of commercial material should not be played any louder than the volume of the program material. His job was to override my job. His job doesn't exist anymore. All that stuff is automated, and they're really not paying much attention to the dynamic range of the commercials compared to the program.
And there's no one there, of course, to ride the levels or anything else anymore.
Nobody at all.
And in order to make the commercials louder, you just need to compress it more.
It's the same thing hams do mostly on HF with the compressor that's in most of your HF radios. The idea is, in human speech, the loudest sounds are very short, spiky peaks. If you allow those sounds to go out through your transmitter without distortion, and then all the rest of the sound is not compressed to raise its level by comparison, the volume that you're transmitting with will be very low because you have to keep those peaks from causing a lot of distortion. In ham radio, the problem you'd have is they'd spread out in frequency, it'd splatter across the band. So you don't want to do that, but you want to raise the average energy, bring up the energy of the medium level sounds, which is where most of the communications content is. Bring that up, put a limit on the volume of those loud spikes. I guess technically what I'm describing is a limiter, but a compressor will bring that average sound even up a little bit louder. If it's adjusted right, you don't really hear the effects. If you can hear the effects, it's not adjusted right. But if you turn it on and off and it is adjusted right, you should definitely hear a significant increase on a sideband signal. You'll see it on the meter in the loudness of the person that you're talking to. If someone says, well, you're running a compressor, I don't like what it sounds like, that compressor's adjusted wrong.
This concludes our interview with videographer Gary Pierce, KN4AQ, the man and the microphone behind Amateur Radio Video News, ARVN, a production company that specializes in ham radio videos. Gary was interviewed by Rain's Hap Holly, KC9RP. Now for Hap and the rest of the crew, I'm Dwayne Whittingham, N9SSN, bidding you a very 73. The Rain Report is copyright 1990 through 2009, Rain, all rights reserved. Hope your Thanksgiving will be a relaxing and gluttonous one. This is the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com.